Welcome. I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Deep State. Here on The Deep State, we go deep into stories that the mainstream media don't want you to know. The Deep State imprisoned me once upon a time. Well, now we're going after The Deep State. I'd like to welcome our guest, Dr. Wilmer Leon. Dr. Leon is a political scientist and a radio host and commentator. Dr. Leon, welcome to the show. So good to have you.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure, John. Thank you.
Thank you. Wilmer, let's start by talking about Iran. You know, I'm almost reluctant to get into specifics of what's happening on the ground because it's changing so quickly. Like literally day by day. One day Donald Trump says, we've won, it's over, the Strait of Hormuz is going to be a major moneymaker for the United States because now we own it. And then the next day he uses some really very filthy language to say what he's going to do to the Iranian government, the Iranian military, the Iranian people. Then he says again, we've won. Then the day after that, he says he's going to destroy 7,000 years of Persian civilization. So my question is, Benjamin Netanyahu aside, and the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu came to Washington and asked Donald Trump to do this, what do you assess the United States' strategic goals in Iran being today? Why are we doing this? What does the United States get out of this war of choice?
Well, let me start by saying I can solve the first part of your conundrum by, you just said, Donald Trump says. So the first answer is, don't listen to Donald Trump. therein lies your problem. So I think there are a couple of things. I think this is what I would call a multivariate equation. First of all, I see Donald Trump looking at the midterms.
Mm-hmm.
And historically there is the premise that the country won't change horses in the middle of a war. So if right. Donald Trump wants to retain control, in his mind anyway, if he wants to retain control of the House and the Senate, then let me start a war and people won't vote us out.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, the first issue. Another factor here is just utter arrogance, is Donald Trump and many in his administration are believing their own press clippings, and they're ignoring the realities of development within the region over the last 15 years or so. Iran is not the Iran of 15 years ago. Yemen / Ansar Allah, they're not the Yemen of 15 years. Technological advances have developed exponentially. And so we've had to move from a symmetrical war, the green uniforms versus the blue uniforms, and they march across the terrain and shoot at each other, to asymmetrical warfare. Yeah. And you would know this based upon your experience better than I. The United States doesn't do asymmetrical very well.
At all.
We didn't do it well in Vietnam. We didn't do it well in Afghanistan. And we're damn sure not doing it well now.
Yeah.
And so those, I think, are some realities here. And then I know you said Netanyahu aside, but that's a very large factor.
Yeah.
In this, his political problems, and the fact that with Donald Trump being as transactional of an individual as he is, Netanyahu and they say the last person in his ear is the person that holds sway. Netanyahu comes in and says, hey, look, Donnie, this is what I need you to do, man. It's going to be simple.
Yes.
It's going to be simple.
Oh, yes. We heard that in spades, didn't we? We heard that this was a house of cards, that it was so wildly unpopular that as soon as the first missiles began flying, the entire Iranian government would fall apart and people would dance in the streets and welcome the Americans and the Israelis as liberators. And of course, We've heard that before. We heard that about Iraq in 2003. We heard that about Afghanistan. We heard it about Vietnam. Right, and it's never the case. That is never, ever the case. So let me ask you another question, too.
Just real quick.
Please, go right ahead.
There were people in the street.
Oh, yeah.
But they're not dancing.
No.
And there are millions of them. They're in the street, all right. But they aren't singing the praises and welcoming the United States and Israel as liberators.
Yep, that's exactly right. A couple of days ago, you know what? Let me date that. We're at the very end of July right now that we're filming this. So at the end of July, I predicted, and I'm sorry to say that I was right. I predicted that this would become much more of a regional conflict. That it wasn't just going to be the Americans and the Israelis hitting Iran, and then the Iranians hitting American interests in the Gulf states of the Arab Gulf states rather, and Jordan. That's what happened. The U.S. would bomb Iran. Iran would send drones into American installations in Kuwait, Bahrain, Qatar, Oman, the UAE, and Saudi Arabia with success. But the Iranians then began bombing American installations in Jordan, then Ansar Allah in Yemen, also known as the Houthis, said that they were going to jump back in on the side of the Iranians and to begin attacking both Saudi shipping as well as Saudi oil infrastructure. They've done that. So it actually is becoming more of a regional conflict. And just last night, U.S. and Saudi forces attacked Iranian interests in Iraq, pro-Iran militias in Iraq. So it is a regional conflict. But that leads to the question of if the United States is not able to protect itself in the Gulf, Wilmer, if the United States, with its two mighty aircraft carrier strike forces, cannot protect itself against cheap, domestically made suicide drones, then doesn't that lead the royal families of these countries to conclude, why am I hosting the Americans here? If they can't even protect themselves, how are they going to protect me and my country? And to me, that ought to result in a reevaluation of Arab foreign policy across the Gulf, no?
Yes, and I believe it's the people in the country, it's the Saudi Arabian people, it's the Emirati people, it's the people in Oman. I believe they are going to be the factors that push those kingdoms mm-hmm. to a different position, because Mohammed bin Salman, he's okay. You know, he's doing fine.
Right.
But it's the folks that they have to govern that I think are going to wind up pushing these governments into a different position. You know, you mentioned the expansion of this. I read earlier today that Iran struck a U.S. oil tanker in the Mediterranean.
Oh,
I think it was.
Okay.
I think it was. And then also we have from last week the striking of the Iranian ship in the Volga River.
That's right.
So we're seeing an expansion of this. Ukraine strikes an Iranian ship in the Volga River, acting as a proxy for the United States. That part of it is my opinion, but I don't see Zelensky doing that without the approval of the United States.
Agreed.
So this is now expanding beyond the region from a territorial perspective.
Right.
And Many would make the argument that we're this close to World War III, if we're not there already. How's China going to factor into this?
Big issue. May I interrupt you on that point? Just today, the Chinese announced that they were sending 400 surface-to-air missiles to Iran to help the Iranians protect themselves and to protect their radar installations. So even indirectly now, with the Chinese being involved, that has to up the ante, does it not?
Oh, no question. And you had the Iranian foreign minister, Araghchi, I'm sorry for mispronouncing his name.
Right, Araghchi.
Demanding Russia respond to the Volga River attack. So this is, the United States is smoking at the gas station here. I mean, this is really, really, really dangerous stuff. And I just want to, if I could quickly, make the point about the use of the word proxy.
Yes.
Because when you read the Western press, they talk about Iran and its proxies. Well, I don't think Hezbollah is an Iranian proxy.
No.
I don't think Hamas is an Iranian proxy. These are individuals that all have similar interests. They are an axis of resistance against imperialism and colonialism by the West. And I juxtapose that to Ukraine. Ukraine is an American proxy. Marco Rubio told us that in March of 25 on a Fox News interview when he said Donald Trump sees this as a proxy war between two nuclear powers, the United States and Ukraine versus Russia.
Yes.
Ukraine is truly a proxy here. I don't see, and they make it as though these other countries, such as, Lebanon and Hamas and all, that they can't operate, that Yemen, that they can't operate without being told what to do by Iran. No, they have similar interests. They are fighting a similar oppressor. They are an axis of resistance. Mm-hmm. They are not proxy forces.
Wilmer, are analysts distinguishing in any way between deterrence, containment, and regime change here? Or are observers just acknowledging that the whole point is for the Israeli government and the American government to overthrow the Iranian government and to impose on the Iranian people some sort of a pro-Western regime?
Yes. And I think a lot of this, some of this, I think, could depend, some of this analysis could depend on how far back in history you want to go. But I think a lot of this ties to the whole misguided concept of the greater Israel.
Yeah.
And the fact that the Zionists believe that that Israel is supposed to control this entire space. And from there, you can add in the Christian Zionists with the whole idea of the rapture. And I mean,
right,
there are a number of different ideological factors and factions that contribute to this stew, or with my people being from Louisiana, to this gumbo, that are driving these forces forward. And everybody's patting everybody else on the back, saying, "Yeah, this is a great idea," because they all have their own interests that they're trying to protect. But this idea of overthrowing or regime change, mm-hmm, is a bogus idea. It doesn't work. Sanctions don't work.
No,
all sanctions do is heighten the sense of nationality in the country being sanctioned, and it actually makes the government stronger, because the leader in that government can say, "Your suffering is not due to me. Your suffering is due to the West that won't allow oil into Cuba so that the Cubans can turn the lights on and hospitals can perform surgeries.
Yeah.
The Haitians are saying, hey, the suffering isn't our fault. So Venezuela, pick a place.
That's right. That's right. Like you, I've been to sanctioned countries. I was in Cuba 2 years ago with a group of friends. And the Cubans are incredibly adaptive. It's not pleasant sometimes, but they adapt. My partner happens to be Iranian-American, and she's in Iran right now. She goes twice a year, sometimes three times a year, even in this time of conflict. And one of the things that she has shown me, she videotapes everything, but one of the things that she has shown me is that if the Iranians can't get something because of sanctions, let's say spare parts, spare auto parts, let's say, I'll just pull that out of a hat.
Right.
They do what the Cubans do, and they manufacture it from scratch. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at these videos of, you know, daily life in Iran, people are in restaurants, they're walking down the street with their families, they're having coffee and tea late at night. They're leading normal lives. The bottom line being, sanctions or no sanctions, American policy or no policy, the Iranians lack for nothing. Now, I was on the Piers Morgan show today. I'm relatively regular on that show. For whatever reason, Piers always brings a retired Mossad agent or retired Mossad leader to debate me. And they always come back to the same stupid statements. They always come back to, this is a genocidal terrorist regime in Tehran that means to kill every man, woman, and child in the United States. No, that's like literally none of that is true. Number two is that look what they do to gays and trans. They throw them off the roof of the building. Name one who's been thrown off the roof of the building. You're talking about ISIS, and we all banded together to defeat ISIS. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to sell me on the overthrow of the Iranian government because they're throwing gays off the roof of the building. And the third thing was that the Iranians are executing as many as tens of thousands of people a day. This is what the guy told me today on the air. They're executing, his words, they executed 50,000 people the last 2 days. I said, name one. Name one person that's been executed. Seriously, just give me one name. The Western media doesn't want to report it. I said, why wouldn't the Western media want to report it? Everybody in the world would want to hear something like that so that they could take action against it. The truth is, I said, this is propaganda made up by the Israeli government that's just not catching in the Western media. With all that in mind, does that weaken the American and Israeli position to the point where they're going to have to engage in some sort of diplomatic negotiations? Or are Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu so narcissistic and so dangerous that we're just going to have to fight it out until one or both of them are no longer in power?
I think it's the latter, but let's be very careful not to make this a war of personality.
Oh, good point. Good point.
Because if Joe Biden were president, we'd be in the same boat.
Absolutely true.
If Kamala Harris were president, we'd be in the same boat. How do I know that? Because when Kamala Harris was asked what would be the difference between a Harris administration and a Biden administration, she said nothing, as in there would be no difference. Joe Biden sat next to Netanyahu in the Oval Office and said, I am a Zionist.
Mm-hmm.
And Netanyahu looked at him and said, yes, you are. You're an Irish Zionist. So I think we have to be very careful here not to make this, and another, I think, important point is a lot of folks now want to talk about this so-called schism between Netanyahu and Trump as though that really matters.
Right.
And I don't think, you know, that there is this unbreakable bromance that these little skirmishes, they're like an old married couple.
Yes.
And, you know, they're arguing about whether the soup was too hot, and then Netanyahu puts pepper in Trump's tea to spite him, and, oh, you know, they have this big fight. So that's the first point. But the narrative is very, very important. And the example that you just talked about with the Mossad agent is very important. If they're executing 50,000 people, show me the video.
Yeah. There's got to be one video out there. One.
You've got Mossad agents all over Iran. Show me the video. But I can show you video of Mossad and the Israeli Defense Forces engaged in genocide daily. I can show you that video.
Yes.
We can show you video of Israeli soldiers raping Palestinian prisoners. We can show you that. There's a whole lot of evidence. Hence, Netanyahu has been charged with war crimes by the International Criminal Court. They don't do that based on nothing. So can you move away from the rhetoric, and can you move away from the narrative, and can you show me evidence? Can you, Donald Trump, Netanyahu, can you present some evidence to support these claims? The answer is no, which is why I say your claims are bogus.
Wilmer, Senator Lindsey Graham passed away recently. As I said, we're filming this in late July. His funeral happened to be yesterday. And both Benjamin Netanyahu and Volodymyr Zelensky came to the United States to attend the funeral in Washington. That in and of itself says a lot. And it just so happens that at the same time as Lindsey Graham was dropping dead in his home, hours after returning from Ukraine, he happened to have been filming a documentary. I would argue, and this is just an aside, I would argue that his participation in this documentary was a violation of the Espionage Act, providing national defense information to any person not entitled to receive it, and he probably should have been prosecuted for espionage by providing this information to the documentary film crew. With that aside, we're learning a lot about Lindsey Graham, thanks to the footage that is now being released from this documentary. And the footage that's being released is Graham, for example, on the phone with Netanyahu. "Hi, Bibi, it's Lindsey. How are you, brother?" As one example, saying, "Listen, I am so proud of you today." This was the day that the bombing of Iran began. He said, "I'm so proud of you today. I'm just proud to be your friend." And Netanyahu recognizes this pandering for what it is, and says, "Oh, well, I'm glad that you're my friend." And then Graham says, "I'm going to see the president at Doral this weekend. How about if I try to talk him in to having American Air Force pilots accompany the Israelis on your raids against Hezbollah? Would you like that?" And Netanyahu says, "No. I wouldn't like that. We should focus on Iran. Let us worry about Hezbollah. You don't have a fight with Hezbollah. We'll take care of them, but you help us with Iran." What are we supposed to take from footage like this, Wilmer? This is much deeper than the American people realized, even as recently as a week ago. It's not just that Netanyahu came to Washington and suckered us into attacking Iran. No. We went in with our eyes open. We went in as partners with the Israelis. And we had the likes of Lindsey Graham pushing us all the way. What do you make of this?
Well, that takes me back to the point about personalities and not getting really too caught up in the personalities involved. It's not Donald Trump saying to Netanyahu, I'm going to talk to Lindsey Graham and let's see about having American forces. No, it's Lindsey Graham as a separate entity.
Yes.
Pushing this idea to basically a trial balloon to Netanyahu.
Yes.
To see if it'll fly. And if it does, I don't think Lindsey Graham asked that question to Netanyahu without first clearing it through the administration. If it didn't make it all the way up to Donald Trump, it was at least who's the guy with the bald head that's so close to Donald Trump from he's originally from California.
Oh, it's Stephen Miller.
Stephen Miller. That was very Stephen Miller-esque. As far as I'm concerned, and so that's why I'm saying there are other forces, other factors, other elements here that are driving this train, which is why we have to be very careful and we can't just make it a Donald Trump Netanyahu point. And if I could quote a brilliant African American philosopher, Jackie Moms Mabley, who once said, I was raised to understand that if you can't say anything good about the dead, don't say anything. Lindsey Graham is dead.
Thank you very much for being with us today. And thank you for watching. This is the Deep State. And remember, keep asking the questions the government wants you to ignore. I'm John Kiriakou. We'll see you next time.